Welcome to the City Club of Eugene, June 16th program. Brainwaves, worms, and detergents, turning U of O research into thriving businesses. This is the 35th program in our current programming year. I'm Sandra Bishop, City Club of Eugene president. The City Club brings together civic-minded people to make Eugene a better place to live, work, and play. We're a member-supported nonprofit. Our members have a direct influence on public policy, or so we hope. Become a member, if you're not already a member, become a member of City Club at cityclubofeugene.org. Support for City Club is provided by our members and our sponsors, including Evans, Elder and Brown, and Subert, a Eugene commercial real estate company dedicated to selling, leasing, and developing office, retail, and investment and industry properties, including assisting clients in completing 1031 tax-deferred exchanges. It's one of our sponsors. The coordinators of today's program, and I'd like them to stand, are Joel Corin and also Mr. Paul Thompson. Thank you for your help on that. And with that, I'd like to turn the microphone over to Joel Corin, one of our coordinators, who's going to introduce our speakers today. Thanks, Joel. Great, thanks.
I have not done the complete research, but I'm pretty confident when I say this is the first time a program has had the word worms in the title. We really haven't had a lot of worm programs before. This is the third program in a City Club series featuring topics at the intersection of business, social, and technology worlds. This is in part an outgrowth of a new City Club and Eugene Chamber of Commerce Association, and we are thankful to Paul Thompson, who has been very active. He is the one who puts these programs together, and I just stand up and take all the credit. But the work and the ideas are Paul's. We will have more of these programs in the fall. We know that the Knight Institute will be coming to Eugene and to the University of Oregon soon. But science has not waited, and the University of Oregon has not waited for the Knight Institute to conduct research and to have that research become part of the fabric of our society and part of the business world. Today we will have the CEOs of three local companies whose products derived from and are benefited by research that's conducted by the University of Oregon. Don Tucker is the CEO and chief scientist at Electric Geodesics. He's a professor of psychology and associate director of the Neuroinformatics Center at the University of Oregon. He has published over the last 40 years on normal and abnormal psychology, brain function, electrophysiological methods for investigating brain activity. This is not a local company. One of my good friends works for Don and posts on Facebook pictures from around the world, most recently on the beach in Tel Aviv, where he was on assignment for Don installing and repairing the equipment. Mark Baudet, CEO of NEMA Metrics, is a Eugene, Oregon-based technology company, and the mission is to enable scientists of the world to do better study and understand human diseases by offering a more affordable and rapid system that supplements traditional mouse-based research. This is where you're going to learn about the worms. And our last speaker is Richard Geiger, CEO of Dune Sciences, a UO spin-out that uses science and green chemistry to in the defunctify line of cleaning products. Their marketing director is here, and they do have some defunctify with them. If you're interested, after you hear the presentation, be the first in line. We are fortunate to have as first questioner David Conover, a VP for Research and Innovation at the University of Oregon, with the responsibility of overseeing the university's entire research program. Now, a more thorough description of our three speakers is contained in the program on your table, and I ask you to read that to get a better understanding of what these gentlemen have accomplished. And with that, I'll turn it over to Don to start off.
Great. Thanks, Joel, and thanks to Paul and the organizers for inviting us here and giving us a chance to talk about what we do. And I'm sure some of you are wondering about what are brainwaves, and I can tell you. It's the electrical activity of your brain that's ongoing all the time. All the time your brain is working. It has electrical fields that come from the neurons, the cells of the brain. And it was discovered about 80 years ago, or actually in animals even earlier than that, that you can measure the brain's electrical activity simply by pasting wires onto the head. Now, the problem is it's tiny in the electrical currents. It's microvolts, millionths of a volt. So you're amplifying it is somewhat of a challenge, but even 80 years ago, physicians learned that they could measure brain waves and then make important inferences about things like epilepsy, disorders of the brain. So the electroencephalogram, or the EEG, is the way to measure brain waves. And a number of years ago, this is more like 30 years ago, 35 years ago, at the University of Oregon, I was researching psychology by using brain waves. So I wasn't really interested in disorders of the brain, but rather the normal function of the brain by looking at its anatomy and physiology by using this EEG technique. And it was the case that it was hard to get enough electrodes on the head. So many of the psychologists were happy with just a few electrodes, but it turned out the more you studied the brain, the more you saw that all of the brain parts were important and interesting. And so we wanted to get enough electrodes to measure all of the brain parts at once. And there was no way to do it. So I went home to my garage, and I got elastic, and I got plastic, and worked out a way of making a tension structure, a geodesic tension structure. It's like a dome, a geodesic dome in architecture, only it's made of elastic, so it pulls in onto the head and with a lot of different points of interest. And it worked. Actually, the students in my lab were kind of embarrassed with the first models of this, and they wouldn't wear it. They thought it was kind of ridiculous to put 128 electrodes in those days when most people just used 8 or 16. So the students were a problem. I had to get new students who were not so embarrassed and negative about doing this, and I did. But then we had to make the sensor nets. So I had told my children that they had to get their allowance. They had to cut out the forms and put the plastic together. And they thought that was child abuse. And they tried to turn me in, actually, to the authorities for making them work to get their allowance, which I thought was normal. But that was the formation of electrical geodesics, basically, in my garage and in the basement of Straub Hall at the university. Now, EGI, we may not be thriving, but we're surviving. So indeed, this is now 25 years later. We're celebrating our 25th anniversary. And we've been successful in basically selling this technology to many other laboratories. So we began by selling it to friends who thought this was an interesting thing. And then we became fully commercial. We used Small Business Innovation Research, SBIR, awards. So the federal government will look at a new science intervention, innovation, and award funding to allow a company, a small business, to develop that. So we use that mechanism. We actually went to the University of Oregon, and in those days it was Dave Frohnmayer was the president. And we said, look, here's a great idea. You should help us fund this, and we'll actually make it as a product. Couldn't get it. The University of Oregon was kind of broke in those days. It wasn't nearly as well off as it is now. So we were on our own. But fortunately, between the small business and really selling to a few friends, we were able to start our little business in the research park. And in those days, the research park was the wolf pen. John Fentress had a wolf research project. And when he moved out and the wolves were gone, that was our company in the research park. We had to clean the pens and do our manufacturing right there in the original place. But by staying around and building the technology, we've maintained a good relationship with the University of Oregon. And in fact, many of our employees in those early days were students and graduate students, and it still remained that. So we have the Brain Electrophysiology Laboratory within EGI, which I run as a university laboratory. So we train undergraduates. And the good ones, we hire. And so many of the people traveling around the world doing installation and sales and things for EGI systems are U of O graduates. So it's been a very important relationship to maintain that currently. Now we have over 1,000 laboratories worldwide using our technology. Most are in basic research, and they research many different kinds of things, from visual perception, basic research, to the development of autism and prediction of autism in infants, for example. There are a wide variety of topics where measuring the brain waves gives you insight into the mind and into the development of the mind. Now, we have over 2,000 scientific publications with our technology. So this is, to me, I see as really part of a university function. I really like to do science. I still publish. I'm an active scientist. I maintain my position in the psychology department and in the neuroinformatics center, where we bring computational technologies for understanding the brain. But really what I discovered is that by making this company, I was able to do a lot more for science than I was as a scientist myself, mainly by making the tools and handing it off. So I think the translation is important to jobs. Now, we have 80 people in Eugene now and over the world that are working for EGI. We're not real big, but we made a bunch of jobs. But I really think it's our ability to use commercial development to translate from science into other scientists, to bring tools that allowed other scientists to do their work that has been really the most important part of our mission. So I'll stop there.
Hi, my name is Matt Baudet, and I'm the CEO of NemoMetrics. And apparently, in today's program, I will be representing the worm. So NemoMetrics sells a physical device that allows researchers to quickly figure out whether a chemical has potential to be a beneficial therapeutic or whether it has potentially dangerous and toxic side effects. And so for those of you in the room, I'm holding up the device right here. This nondescript black USB thumb drive size device is our product that we sell right now. For those of you on the in the radio, I could tell you this is the most beautiful thing you have never seen. And it actually, there is much beauty in how we've taken something that is so complex and made it simple that anyone can use it. But really, you know, how does this relate to worms, or what role does the worm play in this? And I could say, how many people in this room know what a nematode is? And that's a lot of people. And, you know, you see them in your garden, or you don't see them in your garden, but you hear about them. Well, believe it or not, that worm is similar to you for 62% of its DNA. So what this means is that it has the same genetic predisposition to 62% of the diseases or problems that you suffer from, right? Except it has a couple benefits. You know, one of them is that we don't care about it. The other is that they're small. They have a short lifespan. They're transparent. And while it's not obvious why that's a benefit, they're also hermaphroditic, which means that they can represent both sexes equally well. Well, that little worm inside this chip right here can represent you for 62% of diseases. So what this means is that when we stick a chemical in here and we can electrically monitor its biology and the impact that that chemical has, we can make pretty dramatic inferences on what that means for everything from heart disease to ADHD to diabetes to irritable bowel syndrome to cocaine addiction. All of those are diseases that we can monitor the impact that they have, a drug has on those diseases in this chip. Now, the technology started at the University of Oregon back in 2011. And much like Don's company, there was really a push for how could we have an impact with this technology in the world at large. And so the original founders of the company, Sean Lockery and Janice Weeks, looked for how can we commercialize this. And much like EGI, they turned to governmental grants that help support that initial research and bring it out into the real world. Now, the original device was something that was complex and took weeks to get trained on and even longer to become proficient with. So with that money, we were able to turn it into something that is as plug and play as a USB thumb drive. And then in 2013, the company really launched outside of the university. We also, like EGI, looked at the Wolf Den as a place for our company. but we chose something that was a little bit closer to food carts downtown. And much like EGI, we also looked at the university for the initial hires, people that could both understand where the technology came from and understand the fundamentals behind it, but could also start to see how this could be applicable into the world. And much like many technologies, the very first customers that you find are the customers that say no the loudest. These are the customers that say, we have done it, you know, with Don's company, we have done it with 2 or 12 electrodes forever. We have done it with mice and with fruit flies forever. Why should we turn to this other technology? But through support from the government and the city of Eugene and a lot of support from the University of Oregon, we've been able to get those first customers that showed examples of how it could be used for cardiac disease and Alzheimer's and anti-aging research. And in fact, our very first customer and our very first application showed that it is true that both red wine and green tea will extend your life. So you can spread that all you want. But, you know, one thing that I would go beyond what Don said is that this connection between the university and the startups, the scientific startups in the community, it goes beyond just a one-to-one relationship. It goes beyond just the ability of the U of O to support the technology as it comes out. And much of the benefit of coming out of a single institution is actually the connections that we are able to make amongst each other. And so the fundamental technology that drives my product is actually built off of much of Don's work. And in fact, the support that NemoMetrics has seen, some of that has come because Don's company has been successful. And what you will also see is with our next speaker, Richard Geiger, that there's a strong connection between my company and his as well. Not just in startup support, where we commiserate together about how difficult it is to have a startup, but also we exchange ideas about how to make my product or his product better. And he is, in fact, one of our customers that uses this technology to show that fundamentally his product, which he'll be talking about, the detergent, is environmentally benign and not, it does not have a negative impact on the biology of these worms. And as you remember, these worms represent us. And it's really that strength and that flow of ideas and support and technology that is the biggest impact that the University of Oregon has, in my belief, on the companies in the local area. So, thank you.
All right, so I put up a slide. So sorry at home, you won't be able to see this. I wanted to thank Joel for the introduction, and also I wanted to thank the City Club for this opportunity to tell you and the folks on the radio or listening on the radio about our company. So as Joel said, my name is Richard Geiger, and I'm the CEO of Dune Sciences. So I'm fairly new to Eugene. My wife and I relocated here about 5 years ago, and we chose Eugene as a dual career couple because Eugene offered excellent opportunities for both of us. And you know, some of the other speakers have alluded to this. But the interesting connection is my wife, Elizabeth Scowron, is a researcher at the U of O, and she actually uses Don's equipment in her lab doing some pretty cool stuff. And as for me, I took a number of trips to Eugene basically to see if this was a good place to start a company. And what I found, kind of like Matt, was that there's a ton of energy in Eugene for startups and a growing startup ecosystem. And you know, you see all over the place entrepreneurs like us that are starting new companies doing all kinds of things, everything from worm devices all the way to detergent. And that ecosystem will only get stronger as the Knight campus kind of comes to fruition. So I want to fast forward 5 years after, you know, having come here and tell you a little bit about our company. So like Electrical Geodesics and NemoMetrics, Dune Sciences is also a technology spin-out from the U of O. But unlike those companies, we make consumer products. So I want to try something a little bit different. So I want to see who in the audience is a customer. And Trevor, take note of this so you can hound them. So I want everyone out there, if you have a pet, raise your hand and hold it up. Okay, that's pretty good. All right, now how about a stinky teenager or a spouse maybe? All right, keep your hands up, keep your hands up. You getting this, Trevor? All right, and finally, how many of you are wearing clothes? Okay, all right. Well, let the record state that that's almost everyone in the room. So I guess it's a good thing we're not at the country fair, right? So what do pets, teenagers, and clothing have in common with a technology spin-out? Well, we make Defunkify. It's a line of cleaning products that are scientifically formulated to be both high performance and environmentally friendly, and that's the key. It's both. So if you're like most folks and you go to the store, you have one angel on your shoulder that's begging you to buy the green product, right? I mean, why not? It's supposed to be better. It says it's better for you, better for the planet. It might even have a picture of a bunny rabbit on the outside, right? So the problem is you have another creature on your shoulder, a devil on the other shoulder, and it's whispering, don't buy that product because it probably doesn't work as well. And we hear that over and over again, that the current generation of green products just don't work as well as the traditional one, and so you reach for that orange jug. Now, the problem is that matters because of the scale. So if we look just at laundry detergent, and this number is shocking, the average household in the U.S. does over 400 loads of laundry a year. So that's why you're so familiar with your laundry room. And if you add it up, that's 30 billion loads of laundry every year washed in the U.S. It's a lot of water. And even more importantly, it's 320 million gallons of detergent that's getting poured right down the drain, because that's where it goes out the back of your washing machine. So that's an unnecessary environmental burden if the detergent is not as green as it could be. So why don't those green products work as well? Well, first, as the industry continues to find out that certain chemicals are bad actors, like phosphates or SLES, they're removed. And sometimes the replacement products aren't quite as effective. And secondly, and more importantly, modern textiles have changed significantly. Modern textiles utilize way more synthetic fibers, synthetic fiber blends, and even natural fibers that have sophisticated surface coatings on them, like for waterproofing or anti-wrinkles, stuff like that. And because the current generation of detergents don't work that well in these modern fabrics, what happens is you get body oils, sweat, detergent residue, that sort of thing, and it builds up on the fibers over time. And we know this because we have access to some pretty cool tools over at the U of O, like scanning electron microscopes. And so if you look at a used, just washed running shirt, and I won't say whose shirt this is, what you see is this mashed potatoes looking crud that's packed in between the fibers, and that's what causes the funky odor that comes back 5 minutes after you put it on. And so the problem is then we have a disconnect between modern fabrics and the current generation of detergents. Or to put it another way, you don't wear your grandma's yoga pants, why do you use her detergent? So Defunkify's mission is to use the latest research to make better, safer, more efficient cleaning products. And products that actually work so that you can listen to the angel and buy the green product. So at Defunkify, we start with green chemistry, like it was suggested, and we use sustainable plant-based materials, minerals, and synthetic ingredients that are on the EPA Safer Choice list. And then, with technology that was co-developed at the U of O, quality sourcing and attention to the surface chemistry, we tee up those active ingredients to get down between the fibers to clean that funky stuff that's, you know, causing the odor. And when you look at that same running shirt after it was washed with Defunkify, you don't see that concrete, that mashed potatoes looking crud anymore. And that's why they don't smell. And the best part, that same process that gets rid of the odor, gets rid of the funk, it also gets rid of stains. Now, as Matt suggested or mentioned, it wouldn't be enough if our products were just high performance. There are already some pretty decent traditional products out there. But our product is also low toxicity. So we use state-of-the-art tools from NEMA Metrics and others, tools that were developed right here at the U of O to design, improve, and verify our environmental performance. And so I urge you, especially the folks on the radio who can't see these pictures, check out, go to our website at defunkify.com and check out the clean and green section. And there you can see actual data that shows how our products compare to the competition, both in performance and environmental friendliness. So we currently have three products on the market with more on the way. We have an active wash detergent. So that's this canister up here. So that's simply the best detergent you can buy, greenest, highest performance detergent. So no more stinky running shirts, no more towels that smell like mildew all the time. We also make a spray that's great. It's a shoe and gear deodorizer. So if you're like me and you you suffer the affliction of carpooling soccer kids home, you don't have to roll the window down on the way home anymore. So you can actually treat those things and they won't make you gag. And finally, we have another product that uses some revolutionary technology. It's called an active odor shield, And it's a multi-wear odor blocker for fabric. It's kind of like waterproofing, but for odor. And what it does is it allows you to skip a wash or two. And that allows you to extend the life of your favorite stuff, save water, save energy, all good stuff. So our products are currently available all over the country in specialty bike, running, and outdoor stores. And in July, we're coming to Market of Choice, so please check them out. And you can also buy them on Amazon. And the best part is the products are made right here in Oregon with technology and tools developed in partnership with the U of O. So I'd like to thank you again, and I'd be happy to answer any questions along with the other folks here.
Thank you very much to Don Tucker, Matt Bidet, and Robert Geiger. If the speakers would like to gather at the front, our first questioner today is Dr. David Conover. And David, there's a microphone here at the second mic. If you'd, okay, sure, if you want to, that's fine. David is Vice President for Research and Innovation for the University of Oregon. So welcome our first questioner. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. I wrote down some observations as I listened to those three descriptions of companies that have spun out from the University of Oregon. And let me first begin by saying these three companies are great examples of what our goal is with the Knight Campus that I think you're all aware of, the $500 million gift that we've received from Phil and Penny Knight. To create a campus that's called the Campus for Accelerating Scientific Impact. And here are three great examples where basic research that was accomplished at the U of O has been translated into products and technologies that benefit the outside world. I can't think of any better examples of what we're trying to accomplish in the Knight Campus than these three companies. Some of the common themes were the importance of research tools and technologies that are at the university, the importance of federal funding to support that research, plus the translational work that you heard about. And then the other thing that was common is how much these three companies depend on each other. And that sort of interdependence on the university research and mutual interaction between startup companies is part of what we call the innovation ecosystem. So my question for the, and like each of the three presenters to address, is as we build out the Knight Campus with the goal of multiplying what you see before you 10 times over, going into the future. What is your advice for the sorts of things we need to make sure we've included in the development of that campus that will facilitate more of the kinds of spin-outs that you each represent? So another way to ask that is, what have been the biggest challenges that you had to overcome? And then what can we do as we build out the Knight Campus to help solve some of those challenges in getting a company up and running?
All right. So this is Richard Geiger with Dune Sciences. David, that's a great question, and I personally think the best thing that the university can do is to foster that that network, that interconnection. So one of the things that I think it was on the very first trip when I came to Eugene, there was a program called SmartUps. And I went to that on the very first night that I was here in Eugene, and I met a ton of folks, both from the university and from industry. And it allowed me to start networking immediately. And from that, I met Matt, I met a ton of other folks, including investors. And all of those things have been useful to help us grow our company. And so definitely, you know, open the kimono. Let us come, let the people that are not in the university right away engage us, because you never know where the cool idea is going to come from.
Yeah, I would definitely build upon that and say that active socialization of the students to the rest of the entrepreneurial community is huge. I mean, one of the reasons that I have been trying to be so involved with the startup ecosystem here is my own shock at the number of students that have said, you know, when I'm ready for a job, I'm going to interview, and they don't even look at jobs that are in Oregon, partly because they're not even aware that some of these exist. And in fact, some of the people that I've ended up hiring or interviewing, you know, I'll say, please come visit us. You know, we're located right downtown. And they'll say, can you remind me where downtown is? And so that active socialization, especially of the undergraduates and the graduate students, is, from my view, important for them to see that the entire, I don't know, lifespan of their career could potentially be satisfied in Eugene and in Oregon.
Don Tucker from EGI. I think these are good pieces of advice on how to improve the transition. Another specific thing that I would recommend is internships for U of O students, an opportunity for them to work with a company, to spend some time in that idea of industry. There can be a barrier between science and industry. It's a natural thing that scientists see themselves in one mode and they see industry somewhere else. And different fields have that more than other fields. Some of the engineering, chemistry, et cetera, may not see that just because people are trained often in industry and part of their area. But other areas like neuroscience, for example, may have more of a standoff idea to industry. So the Knight Science Complex really has to overcome that. It has to make industry welcome in an important way. Another element I would emphasize is bringing in business expertise from the outset. So starting a new business has a lot of elements to it, and it's not just having a good product. But it's being able to work in the business world and to speak the language of finance and accounting and law. There are just a lot of elements that you need to keep a business functional that you may not see at the university. Now, I found that not only the research and technology from the University of Oregon has been helpful, but other areas like the business school. There's a lot of talent there that we've used at EGI on several occasions to help us understand different aspects of business management, marketing, international relations, regulatory affairs. I think there are many areas of the university that can be helpful if we ask them and we call on them.
Great. Thank you very much. We're now going to take a break for 5 minutes. Before the break, we're going to take a break for 5 minutes to formulate questions. I should finish that thought. And before the break, we want to share the results of our recent spring fundraiser. The Berries and Bubbly, held earlier this week, resulted in raising $975 to help City Club continue with our mission. So thank you to all those who helped get that program together. Thank you. And we'd also like to thank the local businesses who helped sponsor this and helped with some raffle prizes. Oregon Bach Festival, University of Oregon, the Public Relations Department, Sacred Earth Botanicals, As You Like It, Sweet Cheeks Winery, which was the site of the fundraiser over at Fifth Street Market, Organically Grown Company, and special thanks to Network Charter School, where the kids baked and served an incredible strawberry shortcake. And a special thank you to our own sound person, Jim Dotson, and his band who provided music. We could not drag the people out at the end. The music was so good. So thank you, Jim. So now we'll break for about 5 minutes to help formulate questions around the tables. Remember, only City Club members are allowed to ask the question from the microphone, but everyone's welcome to help with questions. You also might think about directing questions to one or the other of the three speakers, because if we have each of the three speakers answer every question, we might not get many questions in. So take both approaches. Thank you. We'll be back in about 5 minutes.
This is KLCC Eugene 89.7, KLCO Newport 90.5, 89.1 KLFR Reedsport, and at 88.1 KLFO Florence, KMPQ Roseburg, KLBR Bend. KLCC is a service of Lane Community College. We're on Facebook and Twitter and online at klcc.org.
Welcome back to the June 16th City Club program, Brainwaves, Worms, and Detergents, turning U of O research into thriving businesses. Support for City Club of Eugene is from members and supporters, including Gatos, Churnside and Balthrop, PC, Attorneys at Law, and 91.9 FM Radio, KRVM. And now to member questions. Thank you.
I'm Robin Fletcher, and my table was wondering how the intellectual property and copyright issue works with businesses that are coming out of research done at U of O. Who owns the ideas, and how do you pay for them, or who gets paid?
I'm glad to start with that. I'm Don Tucker from EGI. And it is an important topic because if you are a university employee, then you have an obligation that the university owns that work that you do under that auspices. So when we started out, we looked very carefully at the university's ownership of things that we had done in the lab versus our ownership. And actually, because the university was not able to help us patent the work at that time, the vice president for research office, the same that David has here, assigned us the patent rights and gave us the ability. Now, of course, they didn't help us get the patent or do any of the work that was necessary. We had to find a way to do that on our own. But it is a key issue, I think, that's. And the main point about it is you have to talk about it early and openly with the university's ideas versus the separate private enterprises' ideas.
This is Richard Geiger, again, CEO of Dune Sciences. I think Don hit on the key point, and I think that's talk early and often. My experience here was unique compared to other universities that I've worked with, and that the university here was actually much more open to that dialogue. I've had interactions in the past where the university researcher was told not to talk to us as a company, and which was shocking. But that was not my experience at all here at the U of O. It was actually much more positive. But I think the idea, again, is to have that dialogue early and often, and then anything we can do to facilitate that dual support, because patents are astronomically expensive to execute, and licensing can actually end up being prohibitive if you're not careful. So, conversation.
Thank you.
I'm Raisa Maddox, representing Capella Market, City Club sponsor since 2014. And my question is that it seems that much science research up until recently has been funded by the federal government, and it's that research that often can lead to entrepreneurialism. And so it seems like we might be at a place where our federal government is changing their priorities on how they're going to be funding scientific research. And I'm wondering if any of you has any thoughts on how that might impact the entrepreneurialism coming out of the University of Oregon and other programs that are science-based across the country.
So this is Matt Baudet from NEMA Metrics, and I definitely have strong opinions on it, though they're not clear-cut ideas or clear-cut where I fall on it. On the one hand, we have benefited immensely from federal government grants as a way to spin out technology. My background as a scientist, I've seen firsthand the effect that basic grants can have an impact on basic research, and now in the spinning out. But on the other hand, that innovation is not solely dependent upon those grants. So while I believe that it is important for new innovation, having some pressure, so a reduction in the grants that are out there, I think will spur a different type of innovation. I mean, definitely when I personally vote, I vote for increasing in funding, but I do not think a decrease in funding will necessarily result in the death or a absolute squelching of innovation.
Jerry Smith, City Club member. Do other universities have similar programs, and do you network with them, or is it just flat-out competition?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And these days, most universities have a program of technology transfer, and they'll have offices of technology transfer. Didn't used to be that way, so it's a fairly new development. And there is competition. So at EGI these days, we have a lot of scientists bring us technology. They see us as the big successful company, which is kind of silly because we're still a little tiny business. But nonetheless, scientists are kind of naive. So they think that that the big EGI is going to help them commercialize. So we have a lot of interaction with technology transfer offices. It is competitive because you want, you know, the industry to be, it's really the customer, in that case, of the university's tech transfer. But the universities differ tremendously in their ability to encourage business development. And the U of O has traditionally been very supportive. I mean, I can't say anything negative about all of the years we've spent with the University of Oregon. And many administrations have come and gone, and they've all been good. So far. Other universities, not so much. And I won't name them specifically, but we actually will not talk with scientists from certain state systems because their tech transfer is so restrictive and unsupportive for new ideas and development. So now we license a number of technologies. We have technology licenses from UCLA, Yale, and six other places. So licensing is really part of business, and it can be actually quite cost effective to do that. But it takes an open attitude from the university. University has to have the idea, we're here to make business. We're here to help it go and help the faculty develop their relationships and ideas. And that's really the more productive sense. Now, I think what we're seeing with the Knight complex is a whole new era, really. We've really never seen a facility like that at any campus. There are some exciting ones, you know, the Research Triangle in North Carolina and a few other places. But this will be a new experiment, I think. It's a very exciting time for Eugene, for Oregon, because of the Knight gift and the U of O's very active support for it. So I think this is going to be a very exciting time.
Matt or Robert, did you want to reply to that? Okay, go ahead, next question.
Sandy Erickson, City Club member. My question is more about the marketing. Given the fact that now hardly anybody can really define retail or wholesale, and especially since this morning Amazon bought Whole Foods. how do you target an end user when you're developing your product? And how much does the university really help you with that kind of marketing development and market development?
This is Richard Geiger again from Dune Sciences. So we've had tremendous relationships, I guess, with the School of Business. We have done, I think, three different marketing projects where student teams have come over and interviewed us, and then they've ran off and executed on those projects, everything from, you know, trying to determine where our technology might fit to would a particular product or is a particular product wanted by the community or by users. So I think the university can have a huge impact in the local companies for things like that, and we've taken advantage of it.
So this is Matt Baudet from NEMA Metrics. You know, so unlike Richard, who has a product that's for the regular consumer, my company sells something directly to scientists. And I would say that it's one of the most interesting parts of having a scientific company is that marketing aspect, finding the right market and then selling to it. It is also one of the big benefits of the digital age is that you can do very active, very personal marketing even when you're physically located really far from each other. But the part that I find the most exciting is that even though it's a complex scientific device, that the way that you sell to a specific individual is almost the same as that as how Richard sells his product. You have to have an understanding of an individual's need, not just the overall market need, but why that one person will want your product. And you have to have a way to convince them, but to present it to them in a way that they will want to digest it. And it is true that having the connection with both large companies, like in town, we have a number of large biotech companies, Thermo Fisher Scientific and Abcam, but also having that direct conduit to, you know, everything from sports marketing to other marketing classes at the University of Oregon, that all of those skills and that background provide us the labor pool that we need to then go and do an effective job with that.
I'm Jerry Diethelm, City Club member. Our table was wanting to ask you, because these were all fascinating products and really interesting way in which the university has participated in their development. We wanted to ask you what else was coming up. What's in the pipeline? What do you know about that we should be looking for? Tell us what we should be excited about tomorrow.
All the speakers are looking thrilled, Dan.
Well, I'm going to take a swing. I don't know. I guess if I knew it, I would be inventing it. I mean, if you look around, you know, just at Don's company and his technology alone, I mean, I can think of 50 things to try to invent coming out of that technology. So I think back to my original response about what can the Knight campus do for the small companies. What's over there? What are the researchers doing in the labs that that we can see? Because, you know, although I have a PhD and I'm a scientist, my real love is that space between a product that's commercialized and the idea. I live in that space, and I want to help bring products from the lab into your house, basically. And so if we can see what's going on in the university, then we can get involved in those places. And so there are things like startup weekends. So you get a bunch of entrepreneurs together, and they get up and they present an idea in 30 seconds, and then people join their team or not, and then they have the weekend, all weekend long, you know, 24 hours a day, to go try to invent the product. And, you know, I'm not suggesting that we do that, but we could do something like that with the university to try to get these ideas out into the real world.
Yeah, and I would say, just like Richard, that, you know, we get to hear a lot of different startups as they talk about how they're going to try to find a fit for their idea out in the world. And there's two that in the last couple of years I've been excited by. One of them has kind of came before me. It's a company called SuperSensor, and they had a technology for how to actively monitor some of the nutrients that are in soil so that you can apply the right amount of fertilizer at the right moment in time, and not too much and not too little. It was a very good technology, and it really originated in the chemistry department as a complex chemical reaction, and they simplified it into something that was usable out in the world. The other one is a company called Animosa. This is one that has been getting a little bit more press recently, and it is a company that has a way to handle feminine hygiene products out in the wild, so that's whether you're hiking or in the military or in remote locations. And once again, that's from understanding where there's underserved opportunities based upon the business school's learning and classroom projects. And both of those I found real exciting because they took real hard effort and classes and technology and converted it into something that was approachable and understandable and that met a need.
Okay, thank you. Go Go ahead.
John DeLo, City Club member. And I have a question for Mr. Tucker that has nothing to do with the U of O, but it's a question I've had, something I've been thinking about for many years now. And it has to do with lying. First, we had the lie detector. Now, do we have electrical geodesics to measure brain waves when somebody is not telling the truth? And will the lawyers like your answer?
And how will we know if he's giving us a real, true answer?
It's a very interesting idea. We've actually explored this as a business model. I mean, speaking of new ideas, et cetera. And we had a famous polygraph expert that used to work for the CIA. The man's name is T.V. O'Malley, and really quite a character. And he taught us about polygraphy and about lie detection with conventional techniques. And so we have evaluated that, but I can't tell you any more.
All right. Great way to end our program. Before we thank our guests today, I have a couple of quick announcements. We'd like to welcome our newest gold sponsor, the League of United Latin American Citizens of Lane County, known as LULAC. LULAC is a national civil rights and advocacy organization working to improve the lives of Latino and Hispanic people in our country in the areas of economic conditions, educational attainment, political influence, housing, health, and civil rights. We want to thank them for their new gold sponsorship. And we'd also like to thank some of our regular sponsors, ongoing sponsors, Evans, Elder and Brown, and Subert, Commercial Real Estate, Gatos, Churnside and Balthrop, Attorneys at Law, and 91.9 KRVM Radio. Thank you to KLCC for airing our programs on Monday at 6:30 p.m. You can listen to yourselves on Monday. And to the Community Television of Lane County for televising recent City Club programs. Next week's program is Electing the U.S. President by Popular Vote. 5 times in U.S. history, most recently in 2016, the winner of the popular vote lost the presidency. So we'll have a very exciting program next week on the possible change to the Electoral College. And we'll be talking about the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact, where the states are, I think our time is up, where the states are working together to change that situation with that election issue. And more information on the coming programs and anything else on City Club can be found on our website at cityclubofeugene.org. And now let's give a big thank you today to our first questioner, Dr. David Conover, and to Don Tucker from EGI, Matt Badeau from NEMA Metrics, and also Robert Geiger from Dune Sciences. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, and that concludes today's program.